Hello, everyone. Welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show. I'm Mike Polacek, your host for the night. Chuck Gregory is on undercover double secret probation assignment somewhere in America, working to find the next American United States false flag operation of President Barack Obama. So tonight we welcome special guests Frank Cordero, Richard Flamer, and Jim Fetzer. Tonight we are gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in northern Minnesota, in Des Moines, Iowa, in Madison, Wisconsin, in Omaha, Nebraska, and wherever you are. My recommended YouTube, Red Rock Warrior Camp, Standing Rock, North Dakota. If you go to YouTube, you'll find a lot on that. Also, Jill Stein on YouTube. Jill Stein's interview with Chris Wallace on Fox News, for one. Find more Jill Stein in the news online, speaking to the LA Times editorial board. And also, Jill Stein at the Red Rock Warrior Camp. This should be read before every CNN, Fox, NPR, ABC, CBS, NBC, PBS broadcast. We're an empire now, and when we act, we create our own reality. And while you're studying that reality judiciously, as you will, we'll act again, creating other new realities, which you can study too, and that's how things will sort out. We're history's actors, and you, all of you, will be left to just study what we do. Karl Rove. Operation Gladio, Operation Northwoods, 9/11, Boston, Sandy Hook, Aurora, Tucson, Orlando, Dallas, San Bernardino, etc., etc., etc. Also recommended, Jill Stein in the presidential debates. It won't happen, but it should. Maybe we have to reach bottom before things change. Is that when revolution happens, at rock bottom? I suppose so. But Jill Stein in the televised presidential debates, that would be the revolution, right? It would be like, what? A real quality person to vote for in America? But what really matters is not the presidential election. What really matters are a few little books being published by Moonrock Books. What really matters is the truth about Sandy Hook, Boston, and all that. What really matters is that we know the truth about the murder of Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and Paul Wellstone. Because what is really happening is not the presidential election. The presidential election is window dressing, the circus, the carnival, the show, the real stuff is happening elsewhere. And that is why the newest Moonrock book release, America Nuked on 9/11, now available at moonrockbooks.com, taking on the attacks of 9/11 that have brought about our whole new world, is more important than the presidential election. This new book is what is happening. This new book is the revolution, not some dog and pony show on CNN. The truth about 9/11, the truth about these murders is still the key, and even more so after all these years. I actually have two new books to announce. About a month ago, after I was elected governor, not me, I was requested into the basement of the Capitol to be interviewed by 23 members of the Central Intelligence Agency. They put me in a chair, and they were in a big half moon around me. You know what the most bizarre thing about that was? There was every array of people you could imagine, young people, old people, all nationalities. That's what really got to me. These were people you would see every day. They look like your neighbors. Jesse Ventura. Welcome to Sugar Creek. We already know you're here. Welcome to Sugar Creek by CWG Press. You can find that at createspace.com, also Amazon. And finally, as we come to the 15th anniversary of the attacks of September 11, 2001, we have the truth about what happened that day. We were attacked by the government of George W. Bush, the Israeli Mossad, the CIA, and the United States media. If you watched those buildings come down, and you did, you know they did not fall down. They were taken down, blown apart on purpose, and simple airplane fuel had nothing to do with it. The question is, who had the reason, the power, the means to do the deed and to cover it up? Now available, America Nuked on 9/11 by Moonrock Books, moonrockbooks.com. And finally, we now hear from New American Dream embedded nursing home reporter Geraldo de Rivera de Madrid, who files this report entitled, Don't Stand for This. Quarterback Nuke Rock. Nuke Rock, the quarterback of the State Center High School football team of 1939, has decided He will not stand any longer for the national anthem that is played every morning at this nursing home at 6 a.m. on the local access channel. Quarterback Nuke Rock, room 9, also wrote the following on his napkin in the cafeteria, stuffed it down his pants, and smuggled it out in a mayonnaise jar that was then placed on the front porch of Funkin' Wagnalls and picked up as usual at noon by Geraldo de Rivera de Madrid on his daily walk around the block with his pet chihuahua, Julio de Rivera de Madrid. The Nuke Rock missive begins. Can we face it this election season? America is a weapons factory. The White House, a war room, and the president, the manager of the neoliberal conspiracy to recolonize the planet. It exports war and mass poverty. On the economic front, usurious neoliberalism. On the military front, illegal wars. These are the trenches of America's battle for world domination in the 21st century. If not stopped, it will be a short century. Since 1945, America's manifest destiny, posing as the free world's crusade against the Red Menace, has claimed 20 to 30 million lives worldwide and bombed one-third of the Earth's people. In the 19th century, America exterminated another kind of Red Menace, writing and shredding treaties, stealing lands, massacring, and herding native populations into concentration camps called reservations in the name of civilizing the savages. By 1890, with the massacre of Lakota at Wounded Knee, the frontier land grab, internal imperialism was over. There was a world to conquer, and America trained its exceptionally covetous eye on Cuba and the Philippines. American external imperialism was born. Then something utterly dreadful happened in 1917, a successful social revolution in Russia, the second major after the French in 1789, to try to redistribute the wealth of the few to the advantage of the many. The rulers of the world, U.S., Britain, France, and sundry acolytes, put aside their differences and united to stem the awful threat of popular democracy rising and spreading. They invaded Russia, fomented a civil war, funding and arming the counter-revolutionary forces, failed, and tried again in 1939. But Hitler's war of extermination on the USSR ended in a spectacular victory for Moscow. For a while after 1945, the U.S. had to behave as a civilized country. Formally, it claimed that the USSR had a barbarian, all-conquering ideology rooted in terror, disappearances, murder, and torture. By contrast, the U.S. was the city on the hill. The beacon of hope for a free world, its shrine was the United Nations, its holy writ was international law, its first principle was the inviolability of the sovereignty of nations. All this was rubbish, of course. It was an apartheid society. It nuked Japan not only once but twice, deliberately selecting civilian targets. It shielded from justice top Nazi criminals to absorb them as partners in intelligence structures. It conducted virtual show trials against dissidents during the hysteria of the McCarthy congressional hearing, seeding the country with a harvest of fear. It waged a genocidal war on Vietnam to prevent independence and unification. It assassinated African independence leaders and bestowed fascist dictators on Latin America. It softly occupied Western Europe, tied it to itself through military cooperation in NATO, and it waged PSYOP war on its opposition parties. Behind the civilized facade was a ruthless effort to take out the Soviet Union and crush self-determination in the colonial world. By hook and by crook, the Soviet Union dissolved in 1991, and America went berserk with triumphalism. Now at last, the conquest of the world, interrupted in 1917, could resume. The global frontier reopened, and America's identity would be regenerated through violence, which had delivered the American West to the European invaders in the 19th century. The benign mask dropped. Behind it came a rider on a pale horse. The civilizing mission was afoot. A cabal of neoconservative policy wonks first sketched what I call the great leap backward into lawlessness as a revival of the myth of the frontier in the 1990s. The plan for a new American century envisioned the 21st century as a unilateral strive to entrench American values globally, what the PNAC ideologues called freedom and democracy, through preemptive wars and regime change. This frenzied delirium of U.S. military domination turned to an official foreign policy with the Bush Doctrine after 9/11, but it was the Clinton administration's doctrine of humanitarian warfare before 9/11 that shut the door on the prohibition of aggressive wars by the U.N. Charter, remaking the map of the world into a borderless American hunting reserve by removing the principle of sovereignty and replacing it with right to protect or humanitarian pretext for use of force. Clinton's doctrine was an act of supreme, even witty, exploitation of liberal principles and commitment to policies of human rights. It was how the liberal left was induced to embrace war and imperialism as its means of defending human rights. So now we live in a dangerous world. Once again, since the 1930s, the world is being stalked by an expansionist power answering to no law but its own unilateral humanitarian vigilantism. And our thanks for that again to Nucroc and Geraldo de Rivera de Madrid. Tonight's show is sponsored in part by a grant from the Pew Charitable Trust, radical Islamic terrorists, commies, reds, criminals, Al-Qaeda, Bob-Qaeda, Taliban, 24-7, 365, wedding supply of Newark, Big B, Sandinistas, Cubans, Bolsheviks, KGB, constant contact internet services, homeland delivered french fries right to your front door, and Harry's disposable box cutters. Also by Lee Harvey Oswald, Sirhan Sirhan, James Earl Ray, David Lee Chapman, Omar Mateen, Osama bin Laden, the Ford Foundation, the Rand Corporation, National Public Radio, Walmart, did I say the Pew Charitable Trust, Ralph's Pretty Good Grocery, and folks just like you, a little like you, and nothing like you. Our first guest of the evening is Richard Flamer. Richard Flamer usually comes to us each month from his home in Chiapas, Mexico, where he works and runs the Chiapas, Mexico Catholic Worker. Richard is now up in the United States. He's, I believe we're going to be talking to him in Omaha, Nebraska. He's up here working and trying to raise money for the Catholic Worker in Chiapas.
Hello.
Hello, Richard. This is Mike. You're on the air, the New American Dream Radio Show. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm in Kansas City at the moment, on my way to the border, well, actually to San Antonio, where I'll pick up some more tools and head on down to the border, probably be there Saturday or Sunday, after a tumultuous 2 months. I brought back a 98 Chevy pickup, which couldn't be made legal in Mexico since they only allow used vehicles of 10 to 15 years to be legalized. So I brought that back up, and instead I bought two Jeep Liberties. One was in a rollover accident. The other with a bad motor. Put the motor and tranny into the body while I finished cleaning up the final Jeep. I also bought an old snowmobile trailer, which I revamped. They had plywood sides, new lights, and filled it with used woodworking tools for a workshop in Guatemala. That's what I'm driving down there this time. During my time in Omaha, I stayed with an old friend. He's in poor health, but still active. We visited old friends to collect tools, and on his bad days, I went to visit two old friends in hospice care, both retired Jesuit priests, and two companions in a hospital, one of whom had been stabbed in the stomach by his nephew. The nephew's a veteran of the Iraq War and couldn't get into the psych ward at the VA hospital in Omaha. We eventually did get him in there after a couple of days, anxious days. And Jimmy, his uncle, is doing okay, though the stab nicked his colon, so he's having some real problems. Another old friend, Rich Kepin, also died while I was there. A great activist, wonderful friend, and a real bon vivant. Rich lived with the poor, dying in a rented house, where he lived on his own despite his Alzheimer's. And I'm going to miss him a lot. Tom Rudloff, an old business partner who ran the antiquarian bookshop in Omaha, was a partner of mine at one time in the rare book trade. He died of lung cancer as well. Tom spent some years in a seminary, leaving the seminary to work with books. He spent years building a used bookshop in Omaha where the homeless, the poor, and the eccentric felt quite at home. He eventually moved his bookstore to Brownsville, Nebraska, into an old church. And, fewer homeless, but many more eccentrics. He was a good friend as well. I managed to come to this semi-annual demonstration at the Strategic Air Command in Bellevue, Nebraska, where old friends showed up to protest the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and of course the nuclear planning. I managed to make it to the Des Moines Catholic Worker celebration of the 40th anniversary of the founding, and it was a great chance to visit with former workers, friends, and to hear Father Roy Bourgeois, the founder of the School of the Americas Watch, that is former Father Roy Bourgeois. Roy spoke on the injustice of the Catholic Church, and especially of the heresy of that church and its failure to ordain women. This trip's been very interesting for me. A great time to visit with friends and to mourn other friends, to work and live with the poor in a different setting than my normal life in Chiapas, where I stayed briefly in Omaha with the brother of my friend, the woman, the wife of that brother, is undergoing chemotherapy for cancer. So I would take her to the hospital from time to time, and quite spirited. And of course, living at the Catholic Worker in Des Moines is always an adventure, where some of the old faces that I saw, some of those guests of the Catholic Worker, have been going there for 20, 30 years. And it's been awfully hard in some ways, in part because I don't really understand life up here in the U.S. And I'm anxious to get back to my wife and the life we have in Chiapas, Mexico, on the farm. I don't really know. I don't understand life up here. So many people are stuck in kind of a rut where they have lots of money and lots of things, and yet they're so terribly unhappy. My friend who got stabbed, he was trying to calm his nephew down and get the knife away from him, the nephew didn't stab him on purpose, but he was so it was so unruly and so out of it that he stabbed him by accident. But the idea of wars and what happens to soldiers afterwards, doesn't anybody care about that stuff? I see the suicides, and when I go to the VA hospital now here up in the States, I see these young people who are there, and sometimes with half their head missing. The war doesn't stop when the peace occurs, so-called peace. I think that the war in Vietnam is now 30 years later, these soldiers are still reliving their own pain and the pain they cause to others. And I just don't understand it. I don't understand why people continue to fight, why they don't just say enough. And then, of course, there's this sham they call a political race, where it's important to remember that even though you choose the lesser of two evils, they're both evil. And if they're both evil, why vote? Or if you vote, please vote for somebody who's out of the mainstream, who just isn't a part of that kind of life. I don't really have much hope or faith in the politics of the U.S. or, for that matter, the politics of Mexico, where I live. I think the only solution, at least for me, is to try and live in the small community of which I'm a part and build that community and build other communities, help those who are repatriated to Guatemala or help the migrants on the way through. But this stuff about treaties and ISIS and all of this stuff, the homophobia, I just don't understand it. And I don't know, the older I get, the less I understand. But I guess that's life. What do you think about all that, Mike?
Well, you packed a lot into your trip, Rich. How long have you been gone?
2 months. Well, actually, I've been gone 3 months. But the first month was a lovely vacation with my wife, where she drove up with me to San Antonio, where we house sat for some friends. And all we had to do was feed the dogs and water the grass. And it was lovely. And it was a lot of fun. She found out the bus service, toured all around the city of San Antonio, and for $1.80 she could get on the bus and get a transfer, and discovered that there were 22 thrift shops on the route of that bus.
That's cool.
And so she hit all 22 in 18 days. And
cool.
Buying clothes and shoes for our neighbors and for her sisters. And for her, it was a perfect vacation. And for me, I got to see my cousin Jimmy, who's in the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, and got to visit some old friends in Houston, at the Houston Catholic Worker as well. So that first month was more like a vacation, but these last 2 months have just been work and visiting friends. And I realize that we're all getting older, and these friends of mine are dying off. And some go well and others not so well. But I'll really miss Rich Keppen and Tom Rudloff, the two that died this trip. Both of them really good men, decent men.
Rich, where can people send donations?
To Richard Flamer or the Chiapas Project, care of Holy Family Catholic Church, 1715 Izzard Street, I-Z-A-R-D Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68102.
Hey, have a safe trip, Richard. We'll talk to you when you get home, I assume.
Okay. Next month.
See you later.
Thank you.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings!
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to win the game to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Enjoy your
extra big-ass fries.
You didn't give me no fries. I got an empty box.
Would you like another?
Extra big-ass fries.
I said I didn't get any.
Thank you. Your account has been charged. Your balance is zero. Please
what?
Come back when you can afford to make
a
purchase.
Oh, no, no.
I'm sorry you're
having
trouble.
Come on.
I'm sorry you're
starving.
Thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio. Here at Revolution Radio, we believe in freedom of ideas, freedom of speech, but above all, we believe in freedom of existence through self-reliance. This station is 100% listener-supported, and as a fundraising promotion, I have a kick-ass free gift for a $100 donation. 35,000 seeds. 25 years in the freezer. Long-term storable, 54 different varieties. So if food prices go crazy, the shit hits the fan, or if you just want to save tons of money every year by creating your own food like I do, grab our seed pack special. Just look for the banner on the homepage at freedomslips.com. Don't be a statistic. Don't be part of the problem. Be part of the solution. We need, as humans, to start taking care of ourselves and not depending on the megacorps to provide unhealthy, nasty food. Included in this package is also a DVD with 900 survival and off-grid living documents and the offline home canning how to do everything website all on the DVD. So when you're growing all that food, you know how to can it, store it, preserve it, etc. with all these documents. So thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I hope that you will pick up this package and start learning to be free. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps and freedom is one seed that needs to be planted.
What we do in life, it goes in eternity.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? We are waiting to hear from President Barack Obama, President of the United States of America. And if you want the truth about this guy, you really need to check out the YouTube channel Barry Sotaro. Anyway, he is now meeting with his secret committee to plan this week's burials at sea, wedding, drone attacks, terror events, just as he does every week. Okay, while we're waiting, here's Wolf Blitzer to read Benjamin Netanyahu's new book of nursery rhymes, My Pet Eagle. cover art by former President George W. Bush. And now here he is, your Uncle Tom and mine, straight out of Kenya, the CIA and the NSA. Let's give a big hand to Barry Sotoro, president from Sea to Shining Sea. He's got a really big show today. Let's hear it. Here's Barry. Hello, American people, American man, American woman, American kids, American old people. I have just met with my National Security Council as part of our regular effort to review and intensify our campaign to destroy the terrorist group ISIL. I'm sure you have heard about all this stuff in Orlando and elsewhere. It's increasingly clear that the killer took in extremist information and propaganda over the internet. He appears to have been an angry, disturbed, unstable young man who became radicalized on the internet. As we all know too well, terrorist groups like ISIL have called on people around the world and here in the U.S. to attack innocent civilians. And during his killing spree, the shooter in Orlando pledged allegiance to ISIL, ordered takeout from China King, and reached level 4 on Call of Duty Black Ops. As I've said before, these lone actors or small cells of terrorists are very hard to detect and very hard to prevent. But across our government, at every level, federal, state, and local military and civilian, we are doing everything in our power to stop these kinds of attacks. I want to reiterate our objective in this fight. Our mission is to destroy ISIL. Blah, 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 blah. No, really, I'm talking here. Don't make my voice sound like that. I am the real president. Hey, really, seriously, we need to get on the same page, bring something to the table, take it to the next level. Good to go. It is what it is. Thank you very much. And always remember, my fellow Americans, Osama bin Laden was buried at sea and Jessica Lynch was rescued heroically. The USA does not torture. Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. George Bush won the 2000 election. See? Those buildings just fell down. There is a plane there in that hole in Shanksville. It went all the way into that hole and no, there's no blood, and no bodies, and no luggage scattered or plane parts. And Osama bin Laden was buried at sea. God bless America and God bless the American people. Hoorah. Our next guest of the evening is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero comes to us each week from the Des Moines Catholic Worker. Frank is a former Catholic priest. He's actually the founder of the Des Moines Catholic Worker. He has spent, I think it's over 6 years in county jails and federal prisons after protesting against the U.S. military machine, and we're hoping to have Frank right here.
Hello, this is Frank.
Frank, this is Mike in the New American Dream Radio Show. Can you go?
Oh, Michael. Are you live, Michael?
We are live. Do you have 5 minutes in you?
Sure I do. I can tell you where I'm at. This is Michael Palachek, a friend of mine. I'm sitting here on a tent. Well, not a tent, sort of like a screen tent. With Hammer of Justice Jessica Resnicek and myself, we're doing this occupation on the Mississippi River, we're with two locals, and they're folks who have been involved in the battle. This is up. Where'd you go? Just left. Now Michael Palachek is on a radio show. The New American Dream, and he wants to interview me for 5 minutes. So I what the heck? No, not necessarily. Jess is just coming into the tent. So
Hi, Mike.
Here.
Hello.
All right.
So where are you guys at, Frank?
She wants me to do it. Good. All right. So Jessica Resnicek and I are at the pipeline, Dakota pipeline entrance, Mississippi entrance. It's on, of course, the Mississippi River, just north of Sandusky, on the river, the Mississippi River Drive. It's a beautiful scenic drive. However, in the midst of all this beauty, and documented by just going, you know, heading west through the county, the pipeline is being ripping. The people are ripping the soil, digging it out, putting this pipeline in,
and they're coming to the Mississippi, and they have forged the Mississippi underneath it with this crude oil, and we're here to stop it. That's really what we're trying to do. Jess has spent some time up in North Dakota with the folks at the Standing Ridge, Rock. Standing Rock, and she's been down here now 5 days, and we're arrested twice, and these guys, and they're and we're now just trying to get people interested in joining her. We've got a rally on Saturday, a nonviolent training on Sunday, and we're calling for a direct action campaign. And the following Saturday, the 17th of September, we're going to have some nonviolent training again and do a direct action with the intent of shutting the place down, occupying it.
Frank, how is this connected to River Rock? Can you connect the two? Tell us how they're, you know.
Well, they're protesting the same pipeline that's coming through.
Okay. Just in a different spot.
It's the same.
Okay.
It's just in a different spot. But it's, well, it's where it jumps the Mississippi. Kind of an important thing. It jumps to Missouri where those guys are at. Yeah.
What can people do to support you guys?
Well, two things. You can either come and join us and get arrested for the planet. That's really what we need in the next 3 weeks. And if you can't get arrested, support people who can. Michael, this is I've been doing this for 40 years. There are not a lot of times when a direct action campaign can actually stop something, win something. This is the time to do it. These folks are tearing up the land. At least 100 of these sites are being done all over the state of Iowa. We need to stop it with direct action, nonviolent. It has to be nonviolent. It has to be people-based. With the several hundred people, I believe we could stop this thing. I really do.
Is there construction happening right now where you are? Or is
as
it
we
planned,
speak,
or?
It's happening. All is a plan. They're doing it as fast as they can, everywhere they can. It's a full-court press.
And what are the directions to Sandusky? I mean, it's close to or the highway?
The directions is... you just take 218 south of 34 on the Iowa side, heading from the north, or you come up 218, I suppose. What the hell? This is out here. Oh, between Keokuk and Montrose. Gee, many Christmas. Okay. These guys are giving me a hard time. this isn't a very smooth interview, is it, Michael?
It's perfect. It's perfect. Tell us again what's happening the weekend. What's going on the weekend?
This weekend.
You went through, yeah. Didn't you say you have something going?
A local rally going on here at in March at 10 a.m. And then a nonviolent training on Sunday. And then the following week, Saturday the 17th, a direct action effort onto the site to occupy and shut down.
Okay.
And the number you want to talk to is Jessica. People want to call her. She's right here on the line. 515-306-1530. There's a guy here named Hugh. He's been doing it for a long time. Can you talk to him for a few minutes? He's not ready at the moment. I overspoke my hand.
Hey, Frank.
Jess has got some really great. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Frank, I just talked to Richard Flamer, and he's on his way down home. He's in Kansas City, and he mentioned Rich Keppen. And I was just wondering if you'd had a few words to say about Rich Keppen closing.
You said, just that Rich Keppen was a great spirit, a guy who started the St. Anthony's Catholic Worker in Omaha, did it for about 20 years, also was a great resistor, did several 6-month terms for protesting at Offutt. His his passing away is a very sad thing, but a life well lived. That's what I'd say.
Yep. Okay, thank you. Well, good luck to you guys, and
all right, Michael,
hang in.
Sorry.
Okay, we'll see you next week. Okay,
got
thank
it.
You.
All right, bye bye.
Yep.
Sorry, guys. I...
Tom, our next guest of the evening will be Jim Fetzer, and Jim Fetzer sent us a recording, and Jim Fetzer is a former professor. He's a reporter. He's an investigative journalist of the highest kind, and we look forward to hearing from Jim each month, and he comes to us from his home in Madison, Wisconsin, and we'll get Jim Fetzer's recording going as soon as we can. Jim Fetzer... he was a professor for many, many years. He's got many books out. If you go to moonrockbooks.com, as I mentioned in the opening, there's a book, a biography about Jim Fetzer and Kevin Barrett. It's called White Rose Blooms in Wisconsin. And you can find a biography of Jim Fetzer and Kevin Barrett at Moonrock Books. Jim Fetzer and Kevin Barrett, used to have a radio show called The Dynamic Duo, and they've been on many radio shows together, and that's part of the title also, White Rose Blooms in Wisconsin, Jim Fetzer, Kevin Barrett, and the American Resistance. And we'll try and get Jim Fetzer's recording going right about now. If you're having any luck with that, Tom?
Chuck, it's great to be back with you again on the eve of 9/11. I want to report the publication of a new book, America Nuked on 9/11, Compliments of the CIA, the Neocons, and the DOD, and the Mossad, which has just appeared, available at Moonrock Books. Now, let me lay out what's been going on here. There are three major groups in 9/11 research. Architects and Engineers, A&E 9/11, which supports the use of nanothermite and focuses on Building 7. Judy Wood and Dews, which promotes directed energy weapons and no planes theory, and Scholars for 9/11 Truth, which advances the use of mini or micro nukes to blow apart the Twin Towers, but likewise contends that none of the official 9/11 aircraft actually crashed on 9/11. This book and its contributors explain why A&E 9/11 is right about Building 7, but wrong about nanothermite, and why Judy Wood and Dews is right about no planes, but wrong about Dews. The case for nanothermite is easily demonstrated to be basically a myth when it's maintained that the buildings were blown apart using that substance, where three chapters explain that it is a law of material science that in order for an explosive to blow apart a material, it must have a detonation velocity equal to or greater than the speed of sound in that material. The speed of sound in concrete is 3,200 meters per second. In steel, it is 6,100 meters per second. But the highest detonation velocity attributed to nanothermite in the scientific literature is only 895 meters per second. That makes it clear nanothermite can't cut it, which is ironic because it's basically an incendiary that generates very high temperatures, as high as 4,000 degrees and brilliantly bright light, and has been used to fuse railway ties and to disable artillery equipment, but lacks the explosive power necessary to bring about the effects. What we're actually witnessing at the Twin Towers is the buildings are being blown apart from the top down. They are being converted into millions of cubic yards of very fine dust. And when it's over, unlike Building 7, there's no stack of debris in its footprint. With Building 7, we had something akin to a classic controlled demolition. All the floors came down at the same time. And when it was over, there was a stack of debris equal to about 12% of the height of the original 47 floors, which is what we know to be the case from other cases of controlled demolition, namely 5.5 floors. Since the 110-story Twin Towers were more than twice as high is Building 7. Had they come down in any kind of collapse, there should have been a debris pile equal to 12% of 110 floors, which have been roughly 13 or 14 floors. But when you examine and compare, there's nothing there. You can look at the footprint in vain, and you discover the buildings were destroyed to or even below ground level. His father, Frank Morales, an Episcopal priest from St. Mark's Church in the vicinity, explained to me that he had been a first responder and had made that observation himself twice on radio shows of my own. Now, the deal with Judy Wood is that she cannot account for the results that were discovered by the U.S. Geological Survey, which took dust samples from 35 different locations in Manhattan and discovered a host of elements that would have not been there unless this had been a nuclear event, including barium and strontium, thorium and uranium, lithium, lanthanum, yttrium, chromium, tritium. Not only is that host of elements present, but we have a host of maladies that have been incurred by first responders and residents in the vicinity, including multiple myeloma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, leukemia, thyroid, pancreatic, brain, esophageal, prostate, blood, and plasma cancers at rates far above normal, which are associated with exposure to ionizing radiation. These are effects of New York having been nuked on 9/11. Interestingly, the range of micro and mini nukes that appear to have been used to bring about this effect satisfies the technical definition of directed energy weapons advanced by Judy Wood, because they provide sources of energy far greater than conventional and can be directed. Set at 100 feet radius in the core columns, for example, they would have had a diameter of 200 feet for buildings that were 208 feet on a side. Their use enabled the destruction of both buildings from the top down in an effort to simulate a collapse. But they were being blown apart in every direction, being converted into very fine dust, which, by the way, is a telltale sign of the use of nuclear weapons. The fact of the matter is, however, that Judy Wood is right about no planes theory, which maintains that Flight 11 did not hit the North Tower, Flight 77 did not hit the Pentagon, Flight 93 did not crash in Shanksville, Flight 175 did not hit the South Tower. However astonishing they might sound on initial consideration, we have Gerard Holmgren, an Australian blues musician, was the first to notice that the Bureau of Transportation Statistics records, where it keeps every takeoff and landing of every flight in the United States, did not include any entries for Flight 11, North Tower, 77, Pentagon on 9/11. They've been modified now to try to make up, but they're complete. Obviously, they didn't have real data. They're just faking it. Moreover, pilots for 9/11 Truth track Flight 93, which actually was in the air that day, and established that it was over Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, after it had purportedly crashed in Shanksville. And Flight 175 is equally fascinating because pilots tracked it too and discovered it was over Harrisburg and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, long after it had officially hit the South Tower. In fact, I obtained Federal Aviation Administration records that showed that the planes used for those flights were not formally taken out of service or deregistered until 28 September 2005, which raised the questions, how can planes that weren't even in the air that day have crashed on 9/11, and how can planes that crashed on 9/11 have still been in the air 4 years later? The answer, of course, is all the crash sites were fabricated or faked, albeit in different manner, which I established, too, with Major General Albert Stubblebine, U.S. Army retired, who was in the past in charge of all U.S. military signals and photographic intelligence. You can find it at the Real Deal episode number 100. When we go through the crash sites, and not only does the general agree, but he offers additional reasons why I am right. If you want an overview about who is responsible and why, you can find that on The Real Deal episode 103 with Dennis Camino, where we go through the complicity of the various entities that contributed, including the New York Port Authority in transferring the World Trade Center to private hands just 6 weeks before the event, where Larry Silverstein, the new owner, fired the security company that had been looking after the towers, the World Trade Center, since it opened in 2007, hired a new Israeli firm, Kroll, got a new insurance policy with an anti-terrorist clause so that he could claim when two planes officially hit the towers, double indemnity, and collected over $4.5 billion on a $114 million investment. Pretty handy. The whole project appears to have originated in the fertile imagination of Bibi Netanyahu, who wanted to devise a plan to draw the United States into the Middle East to take out the modern Arab states that served as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the region. Indeed, the members of the Project for a New American Century, most of whom were dual U.S.-Israeli citizens, moved wholesale into the Department of Defense when Bush and Cheney were put in place by the stolen election in Florida, where a consortium of American newspapers were on the verge of reporting that it had been a theft, had all the votes been counted, but in the wake of 9/11 decided for national interest they wouldn't publish. What happened then was confirmed by General Wesley Clark, who, when he returned from serving as Supreme Commander Allied Forces Europe, meaning the commanding general of NATO, went to the White House, went to the Pentagon and discovered that the United States had a plan to take out seven countries in the next 5 years, beginning with Iraq and Libya, ending with Syria and Iran. And if it hasn't played out that way, not for lack of trying, not only is the new book available, but I've organized a 9/11 Truth Conference for Saturday, including a dozen experts on different aspects of the case, which will leave no doubt about it. I think the time has come to expose the limited hangouts being run by architects and engineers and Judy Wood and Dews, who not only have an inadequate account of how it was done, but are not even willing to address who was responsible and why. Mike and Chuck, thanks for letting me join you.
Thank you very much, Jim Fetzer, coming to us tonight from Madison, Wisconsin. The book he's talking about is America Nuked on 9/11 by Moonrock Books at moonrockbooks.com.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Enjoy your
extra big ass fries.
You didn't give me no fries. I got an empty box.
Would you like another
extra big ass fries?
I said I didn't get any.
Thank you. Your account has been charged. Your balance is zero. Please
what?
Come back when you can afford to make
a
purchase.
No.
I'm sorry you're having
trouble.
Come
on.
My
kids are starving.
Thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio. Here at Revolution Radio, we believe in freedom of ideas, freedom of speech, but above all, we believe in freedom of existence through self-reliance. This station is 100% listener-supported, and as a fundraising promotion, I have a kick-ass free gift for a $100 donation. 35,000 seeds. 25 years in the freezer. Long-term storable, 54 different varieties. So, if food prices go crazy, the... say it hits the fan, or if you just want to save tons of money every year by creating your own food like I do, grab our seed pack special. Just look for the banner on the homepage at freedomslips.com. Don't be a statistic. Don't be part of the problem. Be part of the solution. We need, as humans, to start taking care of ourselves and not depending on the megacorps to provide unhealthy, nasty food. Included in this package is also a DVD with 900 survival and off-grid living documents and the offline home canning how to do everything website all on the DVD. So when you're growing all that food, you know how to can it, store it, preserve it, etc. with all these documents. So thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I hope that you will pick up this package and start learning to be free. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps and freedom is one seed that needs to be planted.
What we do in life echoes in eternity.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings!
When the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right. You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Did you ever feel that things were not quite right? That everything was just
ever so slightly askew.
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Tonight's Dick Tracy Crime Stoppers Bulletin. When you see something, say something. Because of the murder of 9/11 Truth author Philip Marshall and his family, a special bulletin has been released. Be on the lookout for FBI license plates in your neighborhood. Because of the murder of investigative journalist Gary Webb. Because of the murder of investigative journalist Michael Hastings. Be on the lookout for FBI license plates in your neighborhood. Because of the murder of John F. Kennedy. Because of the murder of Robert F. Kennedy, because of the murder of Martin Luther King Jr., because of the murder of Senator Paul Wellstone, be on the lookout for FBI license plates in your neighborhood. When you see something, say something. Because of the murder of men, women, and children in Waco, Texas, be on the lookout for FBI license plates in your neighborhood. When you see something, say something. Because of the illegal torture, imprisonment, and false flag attacks designed to put the public in a state of panic, Guantanamo, Tucson, Aurora, Sandy Hook, and elsewhere around the country and globe, citizens are asked to be on the lookout for FBI license plates in your neighborhood, as well as a long black limousine with tiny American flags fluttering from the quarter panels. The persons inside the limousine are known to be liars and murderers. This has been your weekly Dick Tracy Crime Stoppers Bulletin. When you see something, gosh darn it, say something. This message brought to you by the Foundation for a New American Dream. Did we go to the moon? Maybe, maybe not. But just like Voldemort and so many discussions that are prohibited in America, it is one that cannot be named. Was 9/11 an inside job? Stop. See? Like that. You can't talk about that. Was Paul Wellstone assassinated? A roll of the eyes. You are sent to Siberia by your brother, your mother, and your cousin, disapparated from the Thanksgiving dinner table. Poof! No one can see you or talk to you. You are a non-person. Might as well go smoke in the garage. Did FDR provoke Pearl Harbor in order to get into WW2? Did the government burn men, women, and children alive at Waco? Was the government involved in the Oklahoma City bombing? Are so-called terror plots and mass murders such as in Aurora, Colorado, and dozens of other terrorist events actually engineered by the FBI and CIA, NSA, in order to bring about a zeitgeist of fear and scare Americans into accepting a police state? What are chemtrails? What does the government know about UFOs? Why does Sirhan not remember anything about the Robert F. Kennedy shooting? Who shot Martin Luther King? James Earl Ray said he did not do it. Evidence says the FBI and others did it. Do those questions have merit, or are they preposterous? We will never know because Brian Williams and NBC and Amy Goodman and NPR are afraid of even the question. Why? Did Bush steal the elections of 2000 and 2004? Ask these questions on any mainstream or so-called liberal website or TV show or newspaper or radio show, and you will get laughed down. Ask it on the so-called liberal progressive Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart. They will try to humiliate you. Why? Is it because you are truly so hilariously pathetic, or is it because they are so, so afraid? The Foundation for a New American Dream. From Information Clearinghouse, The lowest standards of ethics of which a right-thinking man can possibly conceive is taught to the common soldier whose trade is to shoot his fellow men. In youth, he may have learned the command, thou shalt not kill. But the ruler takes the boy just as he enters manhood and teaches him that his highest duty is to shoot a bullet through his neighbor's heart. And this, unmoved by passion or feeling or hatred and without the least regard to right or wrong, but simply because his ruler gives the word. Clarence Darrow, resist not evil. The government consists of a gang of men exactly like you and me. They have, taking one with another, no special talent for the business of government. They have only a talent for getting and holding office. Their principal device to that end is to search out groups who pant and pine for something they can't get and to promise to give it to them. 9 times out of 10, that promise is worth nothing. The 10th time is made good by looting A to satisfy B. In other words, government is a broker in pillage, and every election is sort of an advance auction sale of stolen goods. H.L. Mencken. As nightfall does not come at once, neither does oppression. In both instances, there is a twilight when everything remains seemingly unchanged. And it is in such twilight that we all must be most aware of change in the air, however slight, lest we become unwitting victims of the darkness. William O. Douglas. Now for your local Earth news. This is Mike Polachek with a review of today's news from the eye of the hurricane and the eye of the blizzard. Jill Stein News. Go to www.jill2016.com. Events. Tonight at 7 p.m., Preston Bradley Building in Uptown Chicago, home of the People's Church of Chicago, 941 West Lawrence. And on Saturday, this Saturday in St. Louis at noon, 2720 Cherokee at the Performing Arts Center, campaign rally with Dr. Jill Stein and local candidates for the Missouri Green Party. And this about the film Demolition of Truth, which has been showing on Colorado Public TV. Demolition of Truth, psychologists examine 9/11. September 11, 2001 marked one of the most tragic days in American history. 15 years later, the events of that day continue to have a visceral and even traumatic impact on many Americans. Additionally, millions of Americans and citizens around the world question the official count of that day. The Demolition of Truth presents testimony from highly credentialed scientists. Program length is 120 minutes. It is going to show again. It's been showing all month, but it's going to show again Sunday, September 11th at 11 p.m. on Colorado Public TV. I believe you can also find it streamed live over the internet for free, I believe, at www.cpt12.org/911. cpt12.org/911. And this is regarding another 9/11 documentary film. This one is by Tony Rook, R-O-O-K-E. It's entitled Incontrovertible. And here's what some people have to say about that. Simply put, this is not just the best film I've seen on 9/11, it's the best film I've seen all year. Sergeant John Meters, 32-year ex-California police officer. Kevin Barrett had this to say, one of the best 9/11 movies ever made. Also this about the film Incontrovertible. All family members of a 9/11 victim should watch this. Matt Campbell, victim family member. Incontrovertible is technically brilliant. Ian Henschel, author 9/11 Revealed and 9/11 The New Evidence. Moving, powerful, and informative. Niels Herrett, veteran truth campaigner. Artfully crafted, manages to convince cumulatively that there are still questions to answer, Joe Gill. Absolutely first rate, the film manages to navigate the broad aspects of 9/11 with all the complexity and even tie it with 7/7 and JFK while avoiding the pitfalls of discredited speculative theories. I have no hesitation in sharing this with anyone. David Chandler, retired physics teacher. Incontrovertible. Find it on YouTube. Judith Vary Baker will host the 4th annual JFK Assassination Conference in Dallas, Texas, November 18, 19, and 20. Speakers will include Beverly Oliver, Shane O'Sullivan, Judith Berry Baker, Jim Morris, Abraham Bolden, Gordon Ferry, Barb McClellan, St. John Hunt, John Barber, Jim Fetzer, Dr. Cyril Wecht, Ole Domegaard, Roger Stone, Vince Palomara, and Wayne Madsen. For more information, jfkconference.com. And the 9/11 Truth Film Festival has been streaming live all day. It's entitled 9/11 Sacred Cow at the Grand Lake Theater in Oakland, California, September 8th, 1 to 10 p.m. There's still a few hours left. Streaming online now. Find it at No Lies Radio. And this also from Information Clearinghouse. It's by John W. Whitehead. We've walked a strange and harrowing road since September 11, 2001, littered with the debris of our once vaunted liberties. We have gone from a nation that took great pride in being a model of a representative democracy to being a model of how to persuade the citizenry to march in lockstep with a police state. In doing so, we have proven Osama bin Laden right. He warned that freedom and human rights in America are doomed. The U.S. government will lead the American people in, and the West in general, into an unbearable hell and a choking life. These past 15 years have indeed been an unbearable, choking hell. What began with the passage of the USA Patriot Act in October 2001 has snowballed into the eradication of every vital safeguard against government overreach, corruption, and abuse. The citizenry's unquestioning acquiescence to anything the government wants to do in exchange for the phantom promise of safety and security has resulted in a society where the nation is being locked down into a militarized, mechanized, hypersensitive, legalistic, self-righteous, goose-stepping antithesis of every principle upon which this nation was founded. This is not freedom. This is a jail cell. Set against a backdrop of government surveillance, militarized police, SWAT team raids, asset forfeiture, eminent domain, over-criminalization, armed surveillance drones, whole-body scanners, stop-and-frisk searches, roving VIPR raids, and the like, all of which have been sanctioned by Congress, the White House, and the courts. Our constitutional freedoms have been steadily chipped away at, undermined, eroded, whittled down, and generally discarded. Our losses are mounting with each passing day. Free speech, the right to protest, the right to challenge government wrongdoing, due process, a presumption of innocence, the right to self-defense, accountability and transparency in government, privacy, press, sovereignty, assembly, bodily integrity, representative government, all of these and more have become casualties in the government's war on the American people, a war that has grown more pronounced since 9/11. Since the towers fell on 9/11, the American people have been treated like enemy combatants, to be spied on, tracked, scanned, frisked, searched, subjected to all manner of intrusions, intimidated, invaded, raided, manhandled, censored, silenced, shot at, locked up, and denied due process, and allowing ourselves to be distracted by terror drills, foreign wars, color-coded warnings, underwear bombers, and other carefully constructed exercises in propaganda, sleight of hand, and obfuscation, we failed to recognize that the true enemy to freedom was lurking among us all the while. The U.S. government now poses a greater threat to our freedoms than any terrorist, extremist, or foreign entity ever could. While nearly 3,000 people died in the 9/11 attacks, the U.S. government and its agents have easily killed at least 10 times that number of civilians in the U.S. and abroad since 9/11 through its police shootings, SWAT team raids, drone strikes, and profit-driven efforts to police the globe, sell weapons to foreign nations, and foment civil unrest in order to keep the military-industrial complex gainfully employed. No, the U.S. government is not the citizenry friend. Citizenry's friend. Nor is it our protector. And life in the United States of America post 9/11 is no picnic. And that was from John W. Whitehead, InformationClearinghouse.com. And this is from Nuke Resister, N-U-K-E, resister.org. This is about the Nuke Resister. Is an online magazine. I think they used to have a print edition as well, that since the 1980s has cataloged, has reported on the resistance efforts against worldwide nuclear weapons. and it has been published all that time by Jack and Felice Cohen Joppa, if I pronounce that correctly. Anyway, this is a couple of the stories from the recent edition of the Nuke Resistor. Opening day of the Eurostatory Arms Expo, June 13th, was enlivened by 50 activists from the French collective Disobey as they took several simultaneous actions against war. Professionally attired activists entered the suburban Paris exhibition hall, where some crossed the rope lines and climbed on board a Leclerc tank and another vehicle, unfurling banners and pouring red paint on the weapons. A few took photos and video of the protest, while others inside displayed banners and spoke out against the business of killing. Outside, more activists rallied and some blocked the doors to the exhibition hall, which had been marked with red paint as well. This is another story. This is about a person in Australia. For the last 4 years, I've been doing peace activism. In 2003, I had been in the Australian Army. Australia's murderous support of the U.S. invasion of Iraq saw me leave and seek a life elsewhere. After several years as a high school teacher, I left to live in a Catholic worker house in another state of Australia. Our states are really big. I learned more about colonialism, capitalism, and the opportunity to build friendship and community in the midst of it all. In that space, I started protesting and then blockading what I saw as the preparations for murder through the military machine. The first arrest was scary, but I felt necessary to make a statement at a family open day in one of Australia's largest military bases. And that story continues, and to read the whole thing, you can go to nukeresistor.org. And this is another story from the recent Nuke Resistor by Jack and Felice Cohen Joppa. On Hiroshima Day, August 6, Remy Fillon and Sophie Jallet took part in a demonstration outside the Paris headquarters of Les Républicains to denounce the historical responsibility of the pro-nuclear French political party. Police arrested the two Disobey collective activists and held them overnight after they pasted a few adhesive anti-nuclear stickers on the window and chalked a simple message, "No to nuclear weapons, which cost us $4 billion per year." Charged with defacing the building, they will be in court on November 2nd. That's all, folks. That's the news, and I'm out of here. Good night and good luck. And so it goes. That's the way it is. Stay on the same page. Step up to the plate. Good to go. Take it to the next level. At the end of the day, bring something to the table. Have a good day. It is what it is. It's time to wake up. Your toast is ready. The bus is here. The world is on fire. And we have about 7 minutes until the next break, and I have there's a couple things that I wouldn't mind talking about, and I was wondering if our producer Thomas would come on and maybe visit with us about this. And decides if he wants to do. Okay, well, I wanted to talk about the elections, and I don't know what you think about the elections. But the thing that I'm going through in my mind is, at first I was thinking I wouldn't vote because I think that they're rigged and everything is just, it's not fair. So the best thing to do would be not to vote. And now I'm wondering, I really like Jill Stein, and I'm wondering if I should vote for Jill Stein or whether I should stick with my protest vote, which would be not voting at all. So I'm just saying that's kind of where I'm at right now. And I'm not asking you to agree with me, but I just, what do you think about the elections, Tom?
I think it's all rigged. Yeah. I do not believe we have elected a president since Kennedy.
Really? Yep. Yep.
I mean, it goes back that far, if not further, you know.
You know, it seems like the more you learn and the more you study, the worse it gets. I mean, you see where you like a ball of yarn, maybe you uncover something and it just keeps going and going. And you're right. Where does it end?
It's a big onion. And you just keep getting layer after layer after layer of corruption, you know. We're in a real hard spot right now. This election is, if nothing else, it's comical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got an old woman or an ailing woman who wants to be president and rule the world. And then you have a businessman that's there, be it that he is coming up with some good ideas and stuff like that, he's still been in bed with these people all his life.
Mm-hmm.
So which way would he go? I mean, we really know what Hillary would do.
But, you know, that's why, you know, I do like Jill Stein. Yeah, yeah, truthfully, to me, she's got two glorious months of trying to do the right thing. But I wonder what, you know, why they trash Trump is because he's a wild card and they can't control him.
Well, I think that's an act that he's putting on myself. I mean, when a push comes to shove, he's going to go where the bucks are. I mean, he is a businessman.
Yeah.
And the world's being run by corporations, if you ask me, not governments.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I hope, you know, he has hinted that he knows the truth about 9/11, or maybe, I suppose they all do, but that he at least cares about the truth. And
I believe he would be a better president, you know, than the rest of them, personally. I mean, but we need somebody like that in order to straighten us out and get us running right again.
I just think, with me, with Hillary, it's just so much more of the same. You know, so it's like you say, I mean, people of our age have lived their whole adult life with crap. You know?
we dropped the ball and let it happen is what it is.
You know? Yeah.
That's what's happened. What's happened to this world is partially our fault.
That's true. We get what we deserve, I suppose.
Well, I don't know about that, but we sure let them do it. We let other people do our thinking for us where we should have been the ones doing the thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think? When you think about the election, upcoming election, what? You know, you think it's rigged, you're probably not going to participate, or?
No, I couldn't bring myself to pick a lesser of two evils. Evil is still evil.
Yeah. I didn't vote in the last election. That was the first time I ever did that. And that felt right to me to not, it was weird, but it felt right. Before that, I had always voted. And I even ran for Congress in Iowa in, 2000, the year Bush got elected, because I really believe, you know, I ran as a Democrat. I believe that the Democratic Party of the Kennedys, you know, how if you do the right thing and you're for the right thing, good things will happen. But I don't know.
Well, they have too much control and they have all the money.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. And that's... That kind of runs the show if you got the money. Like,
well, you're kind of above the law when you hit a certain bank account number, you know, what it seems.
Yeah, I do watch CNN. I have to, I don't have to, but I work out. On the workout machine, they have it set on CNN, so you have to. If you're going to watch anything, you have to watch that. So I've seen a lot of CNN in the past year, more than I wanted to. But still, I can see how it's all Clinton, it's all Trump, and they are really trashing Trump as far as I can see, a daily, hourly, minute by minute.
And Has a third party ever won in the United States before?
Well, I don't believe so, no. But I still... Yeah. No, just with me running for Congress, I'm one who would still, you know, hope for the best. You know, I'm one of those who you can just, I think a good try is still a good thing. So I applaud Jill Stein for what she's doing, and I just think that she has, it would be amazing if that, you know, you talk about, is this the revolution or the revolution? The revolution would be Jill Stein in the presidency. Okay, thank you, Thomas.
Problem. Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Data safe? Do you have the necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation? Is survival and gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive. Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents. Imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank, or all the banks for that matter. Are your banking records safe in your hands? So when they get things fixed and repaired, you can say, hey, look, this is what I had. You have it. I want it back. Is your personal data safe? Family records, addresses, phone numbers? We'll squeeze on over to freedomslips.com. Yes, that's www.freedomslips.com. Click the banner on the homepage for the EMP-proof bullet drive to get the full scoop of everything that we offer. So, folks, keep your data safe for your peace of mind. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
If you are a good American, then with all the poking and probing going on in airplanes, trains, ball games, schools, the mall, you might well be asking yourself, am I a terrorist? Well, the Center for American Studies has put together a handy brochure now available at most USA interstate rest areas called Mommy, Am I a Terrorist? A few samples from the brochure. If you are driving past a policeman in the United States, you might be a terrorist. If your Reader's Digest subscription is expired, you might be a terrorist. If you order a salad, you might be a terrorist. If you are walking down the street, you might be a terrorist. If your American flag on your front porch flapping in the spring breeze is not larger than a circus tent, you might be a terrorist. If you are directing by remote control from the portico off the Rose Garden, a drone airplane that hits the home of a family in a small town in Pakistan and rips their arms and legs from their bodies, their heads from their shoulders, and forever destroys the lives of their extended family, you might be a terrorist. Well, it's been another long week in Moon Rock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. The local radio station in Moon Rock Lake is WKRZ. The station has been in the Marconi family for over 70 years. Each Thursday night, they always had their old-time radio hour with Bud Abbott, Gracie Allen, Jack Benny, Groucho Marx, Lucille Ball. And now, these years, they have a new modern Thursday night show. And so now, stay tuned. Sit back and relax and join us for another episode of Thursday Night Radio. Tonight, the adventures of Herbert Wisniewski, an American in prison. Sponsored by Big Yellow Earplugs. When you've had enough, we're going to be here for you. Big Yellow Earplugs. One size is all you're going to need. Why go on, so lonely, never alone? Herbert dreamed and vowed to remember these sticky notes, words to live by from his dream when he awoke. Number 119-36999 made lists, even in his sleep. He talked as he slept, reciting yet another list. Sweet Jesus, his chest rose. The rough gray blanket swelled up and down a wave. Apple pie, he said, and licked his lips as a real tear glazed his eyes. Hot dogs, he chewed. Chevrolet. His hands pushed the blanket up as he squeezed the steering wheel. He loved prisons, American prisons, all of them, even though he knew of only one. They were strong and made of bricks and blocks, and there was thought somewhere in them and heritage and meaning and history. He felt himself lucky to be in one of the biggest. He would never, ever enter the big stone buildings of Harvard, but he had been to famous 92 Federal Prison in the small town of 92, Wisconsin. There is much confusion about the mysterious name 92, and the true origin may never be known, said the town slogan on the sign that all prisoners saw from the prison bus window on their way in, out by the artesian well, and the quick stop on Highway 17. And that was something where he came from. He was recognized in his town, one of the most famous people there ever, probably, or not. In theory, he knew they must all be good, the prisons, because that is the theory he subscribed to. But even so, number 11936999 knew he must kill himself. There was just no other way to go on. He was so bored and lonely. He had trudged so long down this path and never come to the end. He decided to be like the great American businessman he had read about in the years-old Time magazine in the TV room, who do not wait for something to happen, they make it happen. If he can ever get by himself away from all these people. Herbert Wisniewski, number 11936999, paced as he slept, back and forth in his parents' living room, back and forth in 10th grade English, back and forth on the 50-yard line. Five-finger discount, that's a gas, you dig? He flashed air quotes three times, then shoved his hands back under the blanket. It was so cold. If there was one thing he was famous for in Unit 9, it was air quotes. It would not be humiliating if the folks back home knew that, but not the fabric of a heroic fable either, he allowed. He mumbled 11936999 over and over, 11936999. His eyes closed. He felt his lips moving. Herbert Wisniewski opened his eyes and saw the butt bulge with a faded black Attica, 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 spelled three different ways and written in a careful hand in permanent magic marker on the seam of the Long John's. Warden John is a butt-licking butt-licker. Take your time, people. Please don't rush when making pancakes or shooting free throws. The man above him screamed in his sleep along with the others. From across the aisle, someone yelled, "Officer, Ossifer, Officer, Ossifer, Mr. Ossifer, Ossifer. What is the price of a gallon of milk these days in Missoula?" Nothing anyone says in their sleep can be used against them. It had recently become a 92 meme. One of the jailhouse lawyers had discovered such a president. They can't hit you with that. What you don't know what you are saying. "Are you sure you bought the right bread?" "Whole wheat," I said. "This is not whole wheat. This is whole goat piss," I said. "Whole wheat." "Sir, Lieutenant, sir, have you checked your oil recently, sir? May I eat your cornflakes, sir?" Cries rang out around the dormitory until the keys of the overnight guard jingled and loud snoring echoed down the rows. It will murder him someday, Herbert Wisniewski, if he does not kill himself. And he will never know the name of the woman outside the fence if the butt bulge crashes and smothers him. Herbert heard the scratching like mouse toenails on the dormitory, the night work of the tunnel crews. Everyone was supposed to help, but he had never been asked. He was just one of many. The prisoners, like professional sports heroes, all celebrities in their hometowns, were not that special here, because everyone had a story to tell, and certainly not as important as the prison itself, which made money for someone who slept at night. Even in the dark, even at night, even when everything is silent, in a prison you hear every noise. Keys jingling at a certain time, the particular thud of an iron door, a guard whistling the same tired tune, the clicking of his one heel, the other heel warned to mute. Herbert Wisniewski lay on his back, hands folded over his stomach under the rough gray blanket. He heard more sounds and knew what time it was. Lack of other sounds, and he knew what time it was. Whispers, and he knew who it was. Shouts, epithets, and he knew who it was and what sort of day it would be, like all others. Herbert Wisniewski heard the buses lined up on the road from town. They squeaked in the cold every time somebody in chains went to the toilet in the back of the bus. Some said the buses were empty, and the squeaking was the wind. But when there is wind, Herbert Wisniewski heard the whistle in the corner of the outside wall above his head. And so we are to be taken away in the buses, some said. The war on drugs is over. And just like the Germans when the Allies were approaching from the east and west, the prisoners will be gotten rid of. There are people in there. Then we are still to be taken away. They will take our place. They must always keep the prisons running. My father said that, and his father before him, and I say it now. Herbert Wisniewski wiggled his toes inside his socks. He felt the paper note in his hands. He fought the urge to piss. He did not open his eyes. He thought of how keeping the buses running during the cold night is a waste of gas. Herbert did not want to be taken out to be shot. He wanted to kill himself, like on the movie MASH. They had showed it last Friday night in the auditorium, and he had felt inspired. I'm a good person. I would never, but I guess I did. Kill myself. Easy peasy. Happy death day to me. You look like a monkey, and you smell like one, too. Big sigh. Breathe in. Let it out. Even though I realize that imprisonment is not a sufficient punishment, prisoners are alive. They are less hungry, less cold, less deprived in general than many poor people or even workers. And I feel terrible about this. Herbert remembered exactly what he had read in a brochure from one of the Sunday church people visits. Still, I'm in prison. I feel bad about that, too. And I realize I could have lived without that bread, actually, candy, while at the same time realizing how lucky I am. Now I am thinking too much. I will not be able to go back to sleep, but I must. I cannot waste it, especially since this is the last one. I don't feel so good. He practiced. He would die then and be better off. Herbert Wisniewski rolled to his side, then again his back, crossed his hands on his chest, and stared at the frayed cross-hatching of the wire supports for the bulging mattress above, and wondered when it falls how it will crush him. There was no reason to wonder. He rolled over. The Bible says that sleeping on your stomach is the work of the devil. If he is to be crushed by the butt, it will not be butt face or butt butt, but that matter, it must be butt side. A butt side death is good and honorable, so saith Leviticus. And besides, there is still time. There is still precious darkness in the dorm. Soon he will have to work. Get to work. Go to work in the factory for 17 cents an hour. Years ago he made 13 and before that 11. 17 cents was a good, honest wage. He was proud of that. Everyone wants to work in the factory and make 17 cents an hour making army clothes for prisoners. In the prison, that is the job to have. He has it. They used to get actual pass-downs from the Army, but these days every civilian wants to dress in Army clothes, and there is a shortage. They work hard to supply the entire federal prison, and they are proud. Just think the whole system, and now they will be adding a pink underwear line, someone said. Everything may need to be retooled and dyed. Everyone here is proud to have a job, work hard if they are allowed, so to feel good about themselves and believe they are not in a prison, their lives destroyed, delayed. They are working, making something of themselves, improving themselves every day, getting better. They are Americans. The overnight guard talked to the new guard coming on duty. Not the usual tired mumbles. They were excited. Keeping his eyes closed, Herbert Wisniewski rolled to his other side. He peeked and saw bits in between bunks and over sleeping mounds, a line of crouching shadows along the wall, hiding, listening to the guards. Herbert could not hear words, only tenor and volume, cadence. The shadows pass the word down the dark. The count is off. The fork's in the kitchen. There will be a shakedown. Because if someone had the fork, well, perhaps to stab himself somewhere, in the shower, in the eye, quickly around some corner, in the nuts, the fingers, the forehead, the stomach. That is where Herbert would stab himself if he did, right in the stomach, and let his whole self run onto the floor and his boots onto the shined, buffed floor. That might show them they would miss him then. He touched the side of his bunk, the space in between the mattress and the metal frame where he hid things. The count would be off, and that would mean paperwork, and men not getting home to wives, and wives being pissed off because they count on some relief at this particular time, a glass of wine, feet up on the sofa, some goddamn help at this particular time. The guards are nervous because they also have their hiding places. Herbert rolled over, keeping his eyes closed, trying to preserve the chance at returning to sleep. Maintaining the seam of the rough gray blanket, slicing his eyes into little melon halves. Someone is hollering that he has lost his pet goose or moose. Every morning he cannot find his pet goose. Maybe it is a moose. Moose, goose, they rhyme. Many of the old-timers believe there might be no goose at all. Another screams that there is no hot water, and someone else says the bus is waiting outside, and you cannot miss school yet another day this week. Herbert heard it in his dream, placed the people with his own mind in the play showing in his head. Officer X was unhappy with the missing fork. He was much afraid he would be sent to the Russian front. His wife was very happy, and that made him very happy. Their dogs were happy, which made their three cats very happy. The sheep were as happy as the goats, and the season wrestling tickets made their children happiest of all. The Russian front was a lark with family members, and they made jokes about something going wrong and Officer X being sent there. He was not too much amused. He'd already sent word back to the kitchen to find the fork. "Well, don't you think we're looking?" came the word back. "Where have you looked?" "Where?" "Everywhere," came the word back again. "Just find it." "Where?" And so messages by trusty runner and text messages fired back and forth, all this in the pre-dawn hours while the prisoner slept so soundly, not a care in the world as the world went on without them. The dorm was abuzz with the snoring and silent thoughts of the men in the long, dark, canary-walled prison dormitory. Unspoken, still hanging in the air, was the big news. The word that had spread was also talk they would be gassed from the ventilation system if there ever was a civil war. Every time there is a new person, some old-timer has to tell him. Many of the men have been here since the 1980s, and somehow on the TV yesterday there were big shots saying how the long sentences had been destroying lives, the harmful effects of long sentences on families. That was news to everyone because they had forever been in favor of the war on drugs and had enjoyed this time alone and the opportunity to think things over. They wanted the war to continue because they felt they were winning. They had all the drugs they needed. Now that the war was over, they would likely be sent home to jobs, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, to noisy children, hunger, sleeping outside in church. Herb was so lonely, so alone. He would kill himself, but how, with all these people everywhere? Nowhere during his day or night was he alone. There were hundreds of people where he slept, hundreds where he worked, where he walked, where he ate. If he could escape, if he could run forever across the desert or whatever is out there, then he would be alone, or there might finally call a halt to this failed experiment. He would kill himself, kill himself, kill himself. Every week, Herb received visits by chaplains, case managers, evangelicals from the church in town that are carefully designed to help, but do not help. They are not meant to help. The only thing that would help him is to die. These people do not address the real problem, that Herbert is alive. They want to feel good about themselves, what they are doing for the poor prisoner, while not caring too much at all about the poor prisoner. If they really cared, they would kill him. Herb got letters from home that are supposed to help. They don't help. They never say, "Go kill yourself." They say, "Keep going. You're doing great. We love you. We will be here for you. We are trying to get you out." That's not helpful. Yes, of course, Herbert agreed. We are all solid soldiers in the war on drugs, on the front lines, doing what we can, shouting back over our shoulder to encourage those in the rear to keep pushing. But why get up so early? Are we glad their incarceration has been of use to someone? Of course. That someone was able to make a living out of selling concrete vehicles to patrol the perimeter? Guards, guard houses, guard cars, and toys for guard children? But it is still dark, precious dark and almost silenced, but not to be wasted. Herb thought that he will ask the doctor how to kill himself, and if the doctor won't tell him, he will ask the chaplain if he is in. He might starve himself on the days he does not like the food, but that would take time. Some of the food he likes very much. Sunday brunch, the hash browns, Spanish omelets, coffee, toast. He groaned under the rough gray blanket, pulled to his nose, practicing. He pulled his knees to his chest. The knees are comfort, friends, as the hands he wraps together backward before he goes to sleep. They have been with him through many things, so desolate an island within the prison of 1,000-year-old men, keeping eyes closed, don't let any light through, not yet. Herb stared straight up at the looming indentation in the mattress above. He wondered for a moment about all the things happening in the outside world. The bombings, the sprayings, the stabbings, the shoutings, the eatings, the bouncings, all these things that must be happening if there is a world still out there. The only evidence was the black and white TV in the recreation room and the earphones connected to the radios that prisoners with money could buy in the prison store. Those wires must lead somewhere. Herbert never had money to buy a radio or tennis shoes or postcards to send. Today is the day he will die, Miss American Pie. He will see his father and young brother, and he will be here no more. He allowed another smile under the blanket, and his eyes glowed for a moment, then all returned to scowl, jail face, signifying nothing. I really don't feel good, he told himself. Herb will have to believe it if he's going to be believable. All around him, the lowest of the low got ready for their day. Ugly, short, obese, wildly unsuccessful men moaned and yawned, cursed, shouted, bunks shook, feet slapped the floor as those on the bottom bunk swung out, and some of those on top hopped down, slap, slap, slap. They got up for work, as were, well, how many of their countrymen everywhere, putting on work clothes, hurrying to brush their teeth, listening to their stomachs ask what there was to eat. And neither occupants of the two worlds within the same country gave one thought to the other. Could not. He must get into character, another character. The main character is already fully developed, able to rise and exist and go through the day with arms and legs and feet. A sub rosa, minor character, to be disposed of after a while without much fuss. The sick guy, not able to work, must stumble to the doctor and chaplain, ask permission and instructions to die. Some sort of sidekick to walk beside the main character. The main character was tired, tired of grinding, pushing, struggling, thinking. Because only here you can think. No traffic, no job, children, a very different kind of stress. You can think, and that can be very hard on people. Remembering, thinking, sitting still, time passing slowly, understanding. Heck with that. Out there, many great distractions. Barney the dinosaur, Katie the reporter, Jimmy the quarterback, old style the beer, but here, much thinking. Like a factory of thinking, churning, grinding, never stopping, shift work, dependable employees, 20-year watches, 30, 50-year. Like monks in the cloister lifting the heavy thoughts for the rest who don't have the time. Sitting with crossed ankles on the concrete steps of the forum, the Greeks, Romans, Cubans. In the real world, Herbert had been a, well, it's not important what he had been. That was gone. What he was now was a prisoner. But if one fork could be found, all would be forgotten for a moment. All would be joy and happiness erupting in silent celebration by souls allowed to live another day by not getting their rack destroyed, their locker, their mouths explored with sharp instruments, their hair and balls sifted, investigative reporters pulling on blue plastic gloves to move the tongue and the balls, the corn rose out of the way in search of the missing fork from the kitchen. Herb Wisniewski eased open his eyes like a tired shopkeeper, rolling up the metal grate, protecting his windows, forcing himself to enter the dormitory. The stitches of the rough gray blanket right up close, like a rough gray blanket IMAX movie. The dead Chopin played, Military Polonaise, Opus number 40, Daybreak. Every morning he heard it, either from a radio somewhere, through the walls, or in his own head. His left hip hurt from lying too long on that side on the thin mattress. His neck ached from the thin double pillow. He did not want to move. Collecting the aches in his arms and tossing them into the closet and throwing the door closed, storing them, shutting his eyes again. The person in the top bunk moved, rolled over, shaking Herbert like a semi-trailer loaded with jello, pulling into the truck stop, made noise, put his feet down into Herb's face, and again, rather than the smiles of his own children over Cheerios, bobbing in milk, Herb got to see the dirty, cracked heels and mangled toes and poop on the bottom of this prince's feet. And Herb accepted once more, like a punch in the face from a father in the dark, that he is in prison. And that's the news from Moonrock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats and journalists are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. And that's about the end of our show for tonight. I want to thank Thomas Becker, who helped me much. Big help tonight on the show. He's the producer. Chuck Gregory will be back next week. And thanks to our guests, Frank Cordero, Richard Flamer, and Jim Fetzer. Show archives are available at newdream.us. And as always, we apologize for our mistakes and we plan to make fewer mistakes next week. If you would like to send a donation to the Des Moines Catholic Worker, send to Phil Berrigan Catholic Worker House, 713 Indiana Avenue, Des Moines, Iowa, 50314. And so good night to my friends, Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Don Hawksprung. Good night, Muhammad Atta. Good night, Omar Mateen. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Well, it'll kick in a second.
Thanks a lot.
No problem. I want to remind everybody this is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. We totally listener supported. I'm really wondering where it is now. There it is.
There we go. Okay. Thanks, Tom. Have a good night.
People's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener